You are listening to a sermon by Ruth Enns, recorded on Sunday, July 9th, 2023, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
The lectionary readings for today include the story of Rebecca's engagement to Isaac. In the course of Genesis, we learn more details about Rebecca than about most other women in the Bible. We see her in her relationships with her birth family, her husband and children, and with God. We learn of some of her life's biggest challenges and how God is manifest to her in personal ways. She seems to be someone who makes things happen, who is not content to let herself be led. In marrying Isaac, she becomes a woman of destiny. God promised that Abraham and Isaac would be the beginning of a long legacy. Rebecca is prophesied to be the mother of nations in the new religion started by Abraham. How difficult it must have been when she had so much trouble getting pregnant, and how full of portent it must have seemed when she finally gave birth to the fractious twins Esau and Jacob, who fought with each other even while they were in her womb. The story of Rebecca's engagement is told in particular detail in chapter 24 of Genesis, from where today's lectionary reading comes. I think because it shows how the people around her recognized that she was chosen by God. The story begins with the elderly patriarch Abraham speaking to his trusted servant about finding a wife for his son Isaac from among his relatives back in Mesopotamia. To Abraham, this is crucial for creating offspring and continuing the family line, making it possible to fulfill God's promises about the future generations of his family. Abraham does not want Isaac to leave their territory in Canaan, nor does he want Isaac choosing a wife from among the local women. He tells his servant that God has told him that he will send an angel to help him choose the right person. So off the servant goes, leading a train of 10 camels laden with lavish gifts for the prospective bride and her family. The servant eventually arrives in the city of Nahor in Mesopotamia. Feeling overwhelmed with his task, the servant speaks to the God of Abraham, asking for some assistance. The servant tells God that he will stake out the well just at evening, the time when young women and girls come to draw water. And he will ask individuals for a drink from her water jug. The sign the servant requests of God is that if a woman offers him a drink from her jug and also offers to water his camel, she is the one. And sure enough, things proceed just as the servant hoped. A beautiful young woman arrives, responds favorably to his request for a drink, and of her own volition, offers to draw water for his camels. Rather a clever sign, as by now, the servant knows not only that she is easy to look at and friendly and empathetic to strange travelers, she's also quite the athlete. Apparently, a thirsty camel can slurp up over 100 liters of water in just a few minutes, and there are 10 camels, and she runs back and forth between the well and the trough. Once the camels are watered, the servant offers the woman gifts of gold jewelry and then asks about her family. Here again, the answers come back just right. It turns out that the woman's grandfather is a brother to his boss, Abraham, and she welcomes the travelers to their home for the night. She runs home to spread the news of the visitors. This brings a quick response from Rebecca's brother, Laban. The sight of Rebecca wearing a new ring and bracelets of gold is a pleasant lubricant to his offers of hospitality, so the stranger and his entourage are welcomed to the family home with every convenience provided. But the servant will not sit down to eat with the family until he has stated his mission. He tells the whole story, emphasizing the wealth and success of Abraham, as well as the message he received from God about Rebecca's suitability at the well. One small change, this time he says that he found out about her family before he offered her the gifts. Rebecca's father and brother receive this story with grace, agreeing that there is a clear sign from God that Rebecca is to be the wife of Isaac. The servant then brings forth gifts for the bride, as well as for her brother and her mother, and there is an evening of feasting. The next morning, having fulfilled his mission, the servant is anxious to be on his way back to Canaan. The family wants Rebecca to have some time to think things over, prepare for the journey, and say her goodbyes. But the servant presses. So they opt to let Rebecca decide whether she is ready to go. A rather unusual situation in a society where young women get few opportunities to voice opinions. When asked, Rebecca says, "I will go." Her family accepts that she has been called by God. She is granted the comfort and privilege of her nurse as an attendant, and she receives the blessing of her family. "Oh, sister, may you increase to thousands upon thousands. May your offspring possess the cities of their enemies." Commentators have noted parallels between the choice Rebecca makes to leave her homeland and the blessing she receives to the choice Abraham made to travel to a new land and the blessing he received from God. Rebecca is surrounded by signs of favor from God, from her family, from the servant of Abraham. Rebecca's first encounter with Isaac suggests deep recognition between the two. Rebecca seems to know Isaac from far off, descending from her camel and veiling her face when it is confirmed that the bridegroom is approaching. Isaac responds to her with warmth, bringing her directly into his home. We have more stories about Rebecca. It turns out that she, like her mother-in-law Sarah, has trouble bearing the progeny that were promised in the blessings received by Abraham and by her from her family. The Bible reports that after 20 childless years of marriage, Isaac prays to God for her, and finally, she does get pregnant. She may have been 13 or 14 when she went off to marry Isaac, so even if it is 20 years later, she's still only in her early 30s. Rebecca's pregnancy is difficult. When she is feeling particularly uncomfortable, she asks God, "Why is this happening to me?" God explains to her that not only is she bearing twins, but that two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you will be separated. One people will be stronger than the other, and the older will serve the younger. Here we see another sign of her special relationship with God. Her message comes not through any intermediary this time, but direct from God. A story that shows Rebecca as resourceful and determined tells of how she helps her younger son Jacob use the ruse of disguise to get the birthright from his by now elderly father Isaac, although by tradition it should go to his brother Esau. This reads like the plot of an 18th century comic opera. Attention to detail is required because although Isaac is blind, his other senses are in full operation. The smell, the touch, the taste, the sound need to be right for the trick to succeed. Furry goatskin, smelly hunting clothes, tasty meat stew all play their part to bring about what Rebecca believes is the will of God. And Jacob receives his father's blessing. Even though this upset in the usual order of inheritance is prophesied in the message she received from God when she was pregnant, and foreshadowed again in Jacob buying the birthright from his hungry brother for a meal of lentil stew, Rebecca pays a price for her deception, because once the deed is done, she is overcome with fear that Jacob could be killed by his brother. She urges Jacob to get out of town immediately and live far away from her with her brother Laban back in Mesopotamia. To make sure this happens, she persuades her husband Isaac that Jacob should look for a wife there among her relatives. In this way, Rebecca saves both her sons. This is not another Cain and Abel story. Both her boys go on to have long and productive lives. But it means Rebecca never sees her beloved son Jacob after that, an act of sacrifice she must have often regretted. Unlike Abraham, she does not sacrifice a child. It is she who pays the price of fulfilling the will of God. In the Matthew reading for today, Jesus is reported saying, "Wisdom is proved right by her deeds." Is Rebecca a conniving shrew when she fools her husband? Or is she fulfilling the will of God in the only way she can see is available to her? It would not be the only example in the Bible of human frailty being used to do God's work. The last story we hear about Rebecca is that when she dies in her old age, she is buried in the cave where Abraham and Sarah were buried, and where later her husband and then her favorite son Jacob with his wife Leah would also be buried, a tribute to her contributions to her family and her adopted faith, and recognition of her importance in doing God's work among her people. The part of the story that I would like to leave you with at the end of this meditation is that the Bible makes a point of saying that Isaac loved Rebecca very much. Scholars have observed that this is the first time that marital love is mentioned in the Bible. In preparing for this talk, I encountered many interpretations of the character of Rebecca, from screaming harpy, to witless deceiver, to drudge chained in marriage to a broken old man. I am choosing to side with Rembrandt. It seems that, unlike Abraham and Sarah with their concubines, or her son Jacob with his two sister wives, Leah and Rachel, Rebecca may have had a monogamous relationship with Isaac. In the middle of chapter 26, we hear that even after years of being together, Isaac is still demonstrative about his love for his wife. The Rembrandt painting in your bulletin is thought to depict the couple in midlife, an image of an intimate and happy marital relationship. Surely the love of her husband was one of the blessings in her life, showing to her the hand of God. The assemblers of the lectionary text seem also to want to emphasize this point by pairing Genesis 24 with a poem from the Song of Solomon. We can imagine Rebecca saying these words in the springtime of her relationship with her partner. Listen, my beloved. Look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved is like a gazelle or a young stag. Look, there he stands behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My beloved spoke and said to me, "Arise, my darling, my beautiful one. Come with me. See, the winter is past. The rains are over and gone. Flowers appear on the earth. The season of singing has come. The cooing of doves is heard in our land. The fig tree forms its early fruit and blossoming vines spread their fragrance. Arise. Come, my darling, my beautiful one. Come with me."